Good morning. You know I need better than that. Good morning. Oh my gosh, it's like you ought to be, let me tell you. Good morning. You woke him up, didn't you? He's like, good morning. Hey, air conditioner is working, man. It's a great thing. It's a good day. You're absolutely right about that. Hey, I got some other good news. I was driving from the other campus over here, and those of you may know that Nikki Knight, who usually sits in this area over here in this campus, had open heart surgery last week. Emergency open heart surgery, had a valve replacement, some other issues going on. They sent her home Saturday morning. They had to take her back over here to East Georgia. She had complications. She went back to Savannah, was having a lot of issues, and they've been giving her antibiotics. I'm going to see them this afternoon, and Lindy just texted me just a while ago at 9:30 and said, Nikki looks and sounds awesome. So the stuff is working on her, so that's good. I'm going to put that in my back pocket. Don't let me sit on it because I'll usually break it. No, I'll sit up here. So I'm so glad that you're here today. Are you glad to be here?
Yeah.
I'm excited. Let me tell you a couple things that there's this. We've been talking about in this message series about the drought is over. And as we've been talking about the drought is over, we've been making this correlation between water and love and how water sustains our body and love can sustain us as well. And one of the things that I've been in researching to get prepared for this message, there was a debate that goes on about how many or how much water should a person drink a day? What's the amount of water that a person should drink daily? Does anybody know that? Preston? 8 cups. 10 cups. 23 cups of coffee. Does that count as what now? The coffee and liquid, I'm not sure. So all right. Half gallons, all right? How much? So, all right, this side hasn't yelled out anything. Yell out something. 2 gallons? 2 cups? Just two. You don't know if it's cups or you're going to wait and see. You're not going to put an ending on that. So the thing is, see, the debate rages on, but here's the thing. It's not, they tell you 8 cups because they figure on an average-sized person. But as you'll find out later, it's really based on your weight. And I'll tell you about that in a minute. But here's the reason that we need water on a regular basis. Your cells in your body is made up mostly of water. And as you work, exercise, do strenuous activities, I mean, for some of you, strenuous activities might be sitting beside your son during a worship service. That might just wear you out. I'm not sure. But some of you, it might be sitting beside, I was going to say your name when you got up, and then I'm like, he say your name now. But my point is, there's all kinds of things that can drain this fluid out of you, right? There's different things that stress that can drain you out. Now, I've told y'all before that one of the things that will take liquid out of my mouth that will make me have dry mouth instantly is driving down the road and a blue light come on behind you. Every bit, I don't know where that water goes, but it leaves my mouth. It's not there. You understand? But there's all kinds of things that we have sweaty palms. You know, some people get nervous and they get sweaty palms, and some get sweaty armpits, and you know, whatever strenuous stuff takes out the fluid from our cells. But without the proper amount of fluid, of liquid, of water in our cells won't function properly. In fact, in order to survive or to thrive in harsh conditions, and I would say, or any condition, we need to take in daily amounts of water. Now, taking in daily amounts, I've got three times to take in that daily amount of water. One is to hydrate before. Now, I was going to call this prehydration, but when I looked up on modern terms, prehydration is what people do before they go out drinking. I didn't know that. But I researched that, and maybe you didn't know it, but it wasn't Wikipedia. It was some other thing that's Herbapedia or something like Urban Dictionary. That's it. I'm like, well, I better not use that one, you know, prehydrate, you know. But hydrate before your exercise. Some experts say that you should spend 2 to 3 hours beforehand drinking some water before you know you're going to have some strenuous activity. In fact, they say you should drink 1 ounce per 10 pounds of your body weight. So a person who weighs 120 pounds would need to drink 12 ounces of water. A person who weighs 175 pounds would need to drink 17.5, is that right? Ounces of water. A person my size needs a supersize and get the big gulp cups. You know what I'm talking about? You know, I'm talking about the Route 44 size cups from Sonic. That's what you got to have when you're my size. But 1 ounce per 10 pounds of body weight that you should drink 2 to 3 hours before you exercise. Now, why do you think you need it before? Because when you're running, it'll drain out. But here's the thing. It takes 2 to 3 hours for the water to make it through your system to get to the places that it needs to be. Now, the other time that you would hydrate is during the exercise. I know Jose over there, Chewy over there, he goes and he works out in the gym. And every once in a while, he'll run to the water fountain, right? You get you a sip of water when you're working out, right? But you don't drink 1 ounce per body weight that you have per 10 pounds of body weight, do you? And you know why? Because I did that one time working out. And I thought I was working out with a trainer, and he gave me a break. And I went over there and drank a bit. I mean, I didn't drink but maybe that much in a cup. But the next time I got on that sled and started pushing it, I just stopped the sled and run on out the door, and that water plus that morning's breakfast and everything else come on up. Because when you're in the midst of that strenuous exercise, a little bit, your body is wired, something's going on with it. It can't take in all that fluid at one time. It's because it's all on everything else it's got to do. Then the third time that you can do it is after a strenuous time or a strenuous exercise to replenish what you have. So it's before, drink so much per body weight. During, take a little bit. And then afterwards, replenish. Now, of those three times, which of the three times do you think is the most important time to do the hydration? Huh? Afterwards? All right, how many think afterwards? After the exercise, that's when you should put all the water in. Now, you can only raise your hand one time. All right, afterwards, got that. How many during the exercise thinks that's the best time? Got some there. How many think before the exercise? Well, I'm going to tell you that the ones that are before, that's the most important time. Because again, when you get in the midst of the exercise, it's too late. Because if you take a sip of water, if it takes 2 to 3 hours for it to work when you prehydrate or when you hydrate before you exercise, then how much time is it going to take when you take the sip of water? All you're doing is quenching the thirst or wetting your mouth. You're really not getting that stuff to the cells. And after the exercise or after the strenuous exercise, when you take the water on, guess what? Your cells are depleted. They're already functioning oddly because they're depleted. So you got 2 to 3 hours to wait till they get back up. So hydrating before is important. So the thing that I begin to wonder is, or what I'm trying to get you to see, is the correlation between this and how Jesus' comment that he made in John chapter 7 have to go with one another. Listen to what he says in John chapter 7. We've talked about this for several weeks. On the last and the greatest day of the festival, Jesus stood and said in a loud voice, "Let anyone who is thirsty come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as scriptures have said, rivers of living water will flow from within them." All right, so I need y'all to do this with me. We're going to do this. We're going to read this aloud together, okay? And we're going to do it in a loud voice. I know some of you have been waiting on doing that, okay? So in a loud voice, I want you to read this together. This whole scripture we're going to read together, 37-38. You ready? On the last and the greatest day of the festival, Jesus stood and said in a loud voice,
So when Jesus did this, what he's doing is he's making an invitation. He's inviting people to come and drink. If you're thirsty, come. I got your drink. And once you get this drink will not only hydrate you and get your cells back to where they need to be, but you will have enough hydration that it will overflow from you onto others. But I really don't think that he's talking about water. I think he's talking about love. Any of you who are thirsting for love, a good love, a healthy love, any of you that are thirsting for love, you come to me and I'll quench that thirst. In fact, when you come with me and you drink from me of the love that I have for you, then you will become rivers of love for others to drink from you. Now, it's an interesting thing that when Jesus, let me go back. Where do you get this love? Jesus makes this invitation, but it's in chapter 7 of John. But let me tell you this. Jesus makes an invitation earlier than this in his ministry. In fact, he makes an invitation to some people at the beginning of his ministry that marks his ministry beginning. In fact, when Jesus started his ministry, the very first thing that he did was that he formed a small group. Jesus made an invitation to people to join in with a small group, to be a part. He didn't say, come and join me, we're going to go to the temple and we're going to go worship, though that's important. He didn't say, come and join me, we're going to stop right here and just pray right here, and that's important. What he said was, come and join me, and just come and be with me. Listen what it says in Matthew chapter 4. As Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who's called Peter, and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come, follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. And at once, they left their nets and followed him. That sounds crazy. Maybe that's a fluke. Maybe that's an oddity in the Bible. That's an extreme in the Bible. They just left their work and went and followed him. But look at 21. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father, Zebedee, preparing their nets. So one's throwing their nets, one's preparing their nets. Two of them are brothers, the other two are brothers. One's got his daddy with him. Jesus called to them, and immediately they left the boat, and they left their father and followed him. So obviously Jesus is all about this sibling thing. He knows if I get brothers and sisters that are together, I'm going to call them. But my point that I'm making to you is, he made an invitation for them to come join him. To come join him, and they left and they came. Come be a small group. That's a small group. One plus two is three. That's a small group. He got two more. That's five. That's a small group. Right? They left and they came. So why did they do this? Why would you live? Maybe they don't like fishing. Maybe they want to fish for men. Wonder what kind of net we're going to have. I don't know. They didn't even take a net. They left everything to come with him. And I've always wondered why they would do that. You know, they got pictures of Jesus that you see these days, and he's got blue eyes, which I sort of favor myself. And I'm wondering, was it his blue eyes? Is that what attracted him to him? We're going to follow him because, man, look at that blue eye. Now, it might have been the women, but these were guys, so they ain't following his blue eyes. Well, maybe it was that rugged look that he had, or maybe that swag when he went walking across there and like, hey, come follow me. And they're like, man, I'm following that guy anywhere he goes, you know? What was it that drew these people to leave everything and follow him? This is my take on this. They were already looking for something.
They were already looking to find something. And whatever it was that he offered, they felt like that was worth leaving everything. Maybe they were looking for relationships. Maybe they were looking for someone to share life with. I don't know. But there's something that connected with those four guys that they left their nets, they left their boats, even left their family to follow, to be a part of the small group. There's times that I've been around people and say, well, why don't you get involved in a small group? Well, my husband's not doing that, so I'm not going to do it. My kids aren't going to do it. I don't know anybody in that group. This doesn't even say they knew Jesus. But boy, if you had a blue-eyed preacher leading a group, I'd come and join that group. No, that's not going to get it because you got one of those. No, I can't come because, well, my children are this, my husband's this, my uncle's this, my grandma's this, my job is this, and they don't get involved. They can't even leave a few things. But yet they're looking for something, or maybe they don't look for it, or maybe they're not looking for it as much as what they think they are. Here's my point. Small groups are formed intentionally when somebody makes an invitation. They don't just happen. Small groups don't just poof and they come up. You don't just add water, though that's a pretty good trick if it would, with this, you know, add water and you've got a small group, you know what I'm saying? You know, that'd be pretty good, you know. Nope. Somebody has to make an invitation. Somebody has to accept the invitation. Now here's the interesting thing to me. I wonder in that day and time that I think Jesus could write. I think he was educated. I think he could write. I think he could read. Why didn't he just write him a letter? Why didn't he just go up and put a little sign up on the little dock there where the fishing boats come in and said, hey, come and follow me. You wanna be fishers of men? Come and follow me. Tear off the little number here on the bottom and you can call me if you're interested in getting involved in this group. Because it's not personal, is it? You might sell a piece of furniture like that on a college campus, tear off the number and call them. You might get a roommate like that, though I wouldn't suggest it, but it could happen. Personal invitation. Hey, won't you come and join me? Won't you come and be a part of me? And you know what I find? A lot of people aren't involved in the group, so they can't invite anybody to a group because they're not in a group. Which means that the people who are in the group are the ones that should be doing the inviting. But they're too caught up in them, in their nets. And don't have time to invite somebody. We'll get back to that later. So, that's one way he invited. By intentionally making an invitation. Hey, would you come join me and be a part of my group? Hey, just come and join me, we'll hang out. Now here's another example. A few chapters later in chapter 9 of Matthew, it says as Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew, who's also called Levi. And Matthew was sitting at a tax collector's booth, which means he's probably a tax collector. Follow me, he told him. And Matthew got up and he followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, and I just want to pause there. Follow me because I'm going to your house. Well, my wife would lose her mind if that happened. You know, quit bringing people to my house and it's not clean and all this. But it's interesting. Follow me, but it leads me to come to you. Follow me, but I'm coming to you. So he's sitting there eating a meal at this tax collector's house. And it says, not only was he having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. Let me explain that to you. Tax collectors was considered to be the lowest of low that there ever was of sinners. See, for instance, Leslie. Leslie's my tax collector here. I'm going to use her for an example. I'm the Roman government. I give her authority to charge. Leslie, I want 15% from all of these people. You can tax them all that. Anything over 15%, you can keep yourself. But you better give me my 15%. Here's an army to help you do it. Now she comes out and she's one of y'all. She's one of your kin people, one of your town people, one of your people from your church. And she comes up and says, the Roman government has empowered me to come get taxes from you. I hate to do it, but they want 25%. 25%, I don't know if that's right or not, because that down the road, they charge them 20%. I don't care, y'all special shit. They want 25 from you. They collect. She collects up the 25, sends 15 off to Rome. What does she keep? And they hated them because they thought they were taking advantage of that and using the Roman government and then them blaming it. Hated them. You're worse than sinners. In fact, look how they write it. The writer can't even put two of them together. He says, came to dinner with Matthew's house. Many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, that's the religious leaders that interpret the law and understand and tell people how you're supposed to live and how you're supposed to do. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? It's bad enough to eat with sinners. He's eating with the doggone tax collectors. What's up with that? And Jesus hears them. Disciples don't have to defend him. They don't know. What are they doing? They followed him. They probably didn't want to be there either. Man, can you see those four fishermen going, I hate these tax collectors. You know how much they taxed me last year on my boat and on my nets and on the fish I caught? I hate these. Why is this Jesus taking us in these people's house? Now we've got to sit here and eat with them. They probably all, you understand what I'm saying? Because they don't know. And they're sitting there eating with tax collectors, and they're asking them. They can't answer, more than likely, but Jesus overheard. He can answer. Listen to what he says. On hearing this, Jesus said, you know, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. But now you guys go and you learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have not come to call the righteous, but the sinner. So Jesus talks to these religious leaders that know everything. He said, you know, why don't y'all go back to your books and study a little bit? And just pick up on that passage, I desire mercy, not sacrifice. Then you'll understand what I'm saying. That it's not the healthy who need a doctor. It's the sick. And I got the medicine. Because I didn't come to call the righteous. I come to call the sinner and the tax collector. And I'm coming to their house. See, when I read this, I find out that Jesus breaks down the boundaries that separate people to form small groups. Oh, we can only have a group of married couples and we have to all be married in this group. We can't have no singles in it because we a married couple group. That's a bunch of baloney. Do you understand? Oh, we're an older group. We're in our 50s and 60s and 70s, and we can't handle any of them 20-some years old because we ain't got nothing in common with them. Right? Right? 20-some year old, we ain't got nothing in common. Let me tell you something. When somebody dies in your family and you hurt and you feel the pain of that, it doesn't matter what age you are, that pain of hurt and loss hurts deeply. When you've been betrayed by someone or somebody has done something against you, it hurts. It doesn't matter what age you are. When you struggle in life trying to make it every day, whether it's a class or whether it's a job or whether it's in retirement, it doesn't matter. When you struggle, it is a struggle and it is real to you. See, we have more in common than what we know. See, when we all sweat and are in extreme circumstances, we all get dehydrated if we aren't hydrated properly. Some at different rates than others, but make no mistake, we all go through it. And our cells, when they're dehydrated, our cells, when they're not functioning right, we make bonehead decisions. And we make mistakes. Jesus breaks down the barriers and said, I want all of you in a group. I want you in a group. Let's get together and let's talk about this. Let's be real with each other. Let's talk about it over a meal.
Let's talk about how this is, this hurt is. Let's have a place where we can share, where we can question, where we can doubt, where we can be afraid. You know, one of the things that I found is that sometimes many of us in this world put on so many different faces and things to be what the world wants us to be. We're wound so tight, we don't even know who we are anymore. We come home and we unwind and we let our hair down and we become the real us and we look in the mirror and we're not even sure that's us anymore because of this false person that we've been trying to be for everybody else. A small group is a place where you let your hair down, where you let your blemishes show, where you're not worried about this or that. You're just being real. See, Jody talks to me all the time about, oh, Dorsey, you got to get control of your language. You just talk, your language is terrible. You don't even speak good grammar. Your foul words might come out at any time. You know, you can't just say that to people, you know, and I'm like, I'm just me. And so what happens is I try to be your preacher, and I try to be your pastor, and I try to be what everybody wants me to be, and I get wound up so tight I can't even make a decision. So I need a place, just like you, to be me. I got a small group of men that we meet. Shane's been meeting there 7 years at lunch on Tuesdays. Never said women couldn't come until one came and she said, y'all crazy, I ain't coming back no more. Somebody's wife come. But it's turned into a men's group. Any of you are welcome to come, but that's like me sticking up that sign on the thing and say, pull a number and come on, because I put it in the bulletin. Nobody comes. Got to have a personal invitation. This group and what I'm studying and about small groups, I challenged them this past week. Because we talk real stuff. We talk real hurt, real pain, real struggles with our family, with our children. We got different ages. All of that together. And we talk about it, and we're doing it over a meal, and we really don't care who's overhearing it. We're not talking loud enough that everybody can hear a business. You understand what I'm saying. Though some of you do that every time you go out. Stop it. Especially when you're talking about other people. Don't be talking about other people to begin with. But we get there and we do this. And so this week I'm trying to take it to the next level. Go past just that relationship right there in the Bible study. You know? So we go into the movies on Tuesday. And I will be honest, I got a couple guys in there. Mr. Thomas is one, but I ain't going to call his name. And Clay is another, and I ain't going to call his name. He's not here to defend himself, but Thomas is. And we started talking about going to the movies, and I got to talking about how much it costs to go to the movies. And I believe Mr. Thomas's comment, Charlie, was close to the fact of, I ain't paying no $20 to go see somebody in leotards swing around on spider webs or something like that. He said, don't they have a good cowboy movie? And I'm like, no, not really, but it probably looked like a cowboy. And then I'm thinking, what's on the movies? Wonder Woman, Spider-Man. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know. And then he's like, well, don't they have a good war movie or something? And there's Dunkirk on. Is that the name of it, Dunkirk? So we're going to try to go see Dunkirk Tuesday after our Bible study and try to just do life more than just a Bible study. So I'm interested in that because I told him how much popcorn cost was, and he's like, I'm gonna have to go get another job, just go to the movies one day. And I'm like, yeah, you're about right. But we're gonna have a blast. It's gonna be a good time. But see, we've already worked that time, we broke down the barriers. I'm not a Vietnam vet. I've never been to war. But I can empathize with those who do and understand better how things are from that culture by listening to them. Some of them in that group are not parents, but they hear how it is to be a parent. Some of them in that group are not grandparents, but they hear how that is. Some are married, some aren't married. So we talk about that. We had all this diversity in that group, and it helps make us better. And we'll defend each other till the end, because that's just who we are. And we've got room for more. That's what I think Jesus was doing when he was saying this to these people about calling Matthew the tax collector. See, these other times that we grow in these healthy relationships. See, Small groups allow us to have fellowship. It allows us to connect with one another. It allows us to have a sense of accountability. It allows us to have shared experiences. We share our past. We share our present. We share our dreams of what the future might be, of what we hope. And then we help each other try to live into it. See, healthy connections, getting hydrated before we do life, is so important. See, many of us are just going through life and we're taking sips while we're in the middle of it. And life groups will help you do that. Small groups will help you do that. Life groups or small groups will help you do it when you've finished and you're on the downside of it. You understand what I'm saying? You've gone through the exercise, but you need to be replenished. But it's there and most important before you go through the things. See, we develop the relationships beforehand. We love before. There's a need to love. See, we all are called to be in a community of some type. It's not good to be alone. God's word was that. It's not good for man to be alone. He created someone else. We're created for community. And by the way, if it's God and Eve and Adam, that's three. That's a small group. It's not a pair. He never intended for Adam and Eve to be Adam and Eve without God. Never. That's a small group. You understand? Husband and wife with God, small group. Husband and wife without God, not a small group. Things that we do at small groups, at life groups, we learn about the scriptures. Listen to this. It says in Matthew chapter 5, another time, just listen. Now that Jesus saw the crowd, there was huge crowds coming. He went up on a mountainside and he sat down. And his disciples came to him and he began to teach them. Now let me explain this to you. If I have a large crowd gathered around me, the likelihood of me sitting down and talking to all of them is pretty slim. I'm going to pull out a chair. I'm going to pull up a rock. I'm going to stand up on a rock. I'm going to get up on a stump. And I'm going to try to shout and project my voice so everyone can hear. Jesus didn't do that. In the midst of the loud crowd or the large crowd of worship, in the midst of the large crowd of life, he sits down with his 12 or those that he called his apostles, his disciples. And he talks to them. It says, and he began to teach them. By the way, those two verses are the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, of the Beatitudes. I don't think he was talking to all of them and projecting out to all of them as much as he was talking to his small group and they overheard it. See, if I was to stand here and talk about thirst and I could make you have a thirst for water to where as soon as you run out of this room, you'd have to have it. I wonder if maybe God's working on us in this moment now to say, maybe you need to be in a small group. Maybe these things that you are dealing with weren't meant for you to deal alone or just with your spouse or just with one other person. But maybe it was meant for you to deal with me, with God, with the others in a small group where you could be you. Where you could be taught in God's word or be taught from God's word what it means when he says, love your neighbor as yourself. What it means to take the Old Testaments and all the passages from it and combine it with Jesus' teaching and the writings of the New Testament and goes, oh, that's what it is. To learn what it's like not just to know I need water, but to have people with you that will provide water, that will guide you to water, and will help you take a sip. And when you're so blooming tired and hurt and broke down, they will hold their hand to you and put it to your mouth to help you. That small group. That's why we call them life groups. Because it brings life. Small groups or life groups are an opportunity to learn about God's word and what it means to us, to apply it to our lives. How do we live this out? How can I honor my father and mother? How can I not have a graven image See, Old Testament, how does that look today? But see, here's another thing that you get from small groups or life groups. You get a place of rest, of relationships, and refreshment. When you are surrounded by love and just involved in love, and love is coming to you and filling up your cells, it's refreshing. And it gives you rest and comfort. In the midst of our hurried lives and our busy stuff and all the things that we've got to get done and places we've got to go and people we've got to see and all the busyness of life, we find in that time when we commit to that, we change. Just the same as we do when we're extremely thirsty and we just get that drink of water. Come to me, all who are thirsty, and I'll give you something to drink. Small groups, when they're run properly or when they're functioning properly, reach beyond their small group. One of the interesting things is there's not that many of the people in this room here today in a small group. It's the truth. We're just not in it. We've got every excuse that there is, or we've had an experience in a small group and it didn't work well, or we did this. We're just not into it. If Jesus called us right now and said, come and follow me, we wouldn't do it because we never heard it. Or we heard it and ignored it and went back to fishing and mending our nets and preparing for a catch that would just last for a day and not a lifetime. Small groups reach beyond their small groups. Small groups start to function, and when they function properly, they grow. And as they grow, they realize that the better way to serve is maybe a couple of spin off and start other small groups, invite others to be a part. And maybe we stay connected with this group while we start another group, but the point is we start to grow and get involved with others. We start to look outside the church and go, does it really matter if they're a member of our church to invite them to be a part of our group? Does it really matter if they're the same color as me, the same age as me, the same gender as me, the same whatever? Does it really matter? Or do we all just need to find those people that aren't looking for a blue-eyed Jesus, that aren't looking for a Jesus with a swag, but looking for a Jesus that's in you that says, come, I'm looking for the same thing. Let's go together. And we'll help each other. Jeremy Lin, who's one of the NBA basketball stars of now, plays for the Brooklyn Nets. He said one time, now this is a professional basketball player who has everything money could buy, probably. And he's in New York or Brooklyn. To me, that's New York. That's New York, isn't it? He said this, having a small group once a week gives me a lot of encouragement and accountability. Are you looking for those two things? Are you looking for encouragement to do the right thing? Accountability to do the right thing? He says, even though I go to church, I don't really know many people there. We put name tags on us here every day. Every time we come, we try to put name tags to help us know, because from one week to the other, when we just sit across from this angle to this angle, I don't know who Leslie is. He called her name out, but she didn't have a name tag on her. How would I know? Paula doesn't have one on. Jose doesn't have one on. Dalton has one on. How do I know? And then how do you have that personal invitation when we are trying to do everything within our power as a church and as individuals to help break these barriers down? We put the names on there every week. We try to do it. We try to call you by names. We're terrible. We, some of us, put the names of every waitress at Moe's and Shane's and Barberito's in their phone so they can call them by name when they walk in there, because one day I might make an invitation to them. Won't you come join us when they start overhearing what we're talking about? Jeremy said, even though I go to church, I don't really know many people there, but my real community is my small group. What if your family community could improve by you being involved in a small group? Would you do it? Would you take the time to do that? What if you feel that you're supposed to be doing something, but you don't know what something is? Would you be willing to stand up and say, or would you be willing to say to somebody else, I'm feeling this, I don't know, but I know you. Would you join me and let's figure this out together and keep expanding? What does it sound like in today's language? Come and follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. Because the truth is, those who are thirsty, come to me and drink. And whoever believes in me, this is what Jesus said, as Scripture has said, rivers of living water will flow from within them. Maybe it sounds like what you just heard. Follow me. We'll figure it out. As the band comes forward to close us in our last song, I'll remind you that the prayer area is open. If you require prayer or need prayer, we have other volunteers that would be glad to pray for you. We'll meet you at the back of the room. Just raise your hand and we'll come back there and meet with you. If you're going to get a donut, let us know that. We won't stop you. We'll hold you up from that. You have to decide what connected with you with this message. I had a meeting with Melissa this week, and we were talking. I shared with her, and I shared it with Lindsay sometime, that some people have talked to me about how I preach. And I preach at two campuses, and I teach Bible studies, because I was thinking, I saw y'all, I met with y'all this week and sort of said the same thing. And it's like you say one thing, but if there's 100 people hear it 100 different ways. But there's one Spirit, one Holy Spirit that guides it to be what you need to hear. Follow me. Is what Jesus said. What Dorsey will add to that is, and we'll figure it out.